Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, everyone, to Trisha's True Crime Radio. I'm so glad you made it tonight. My name's Trisha. Yes, I do have a little bit of a cold. I feel like I have some sort of boulder in my forehead. That's the only way I can describe it. Today's show is sponsored by Paws for Purple Hearts in Palo Alto, California. Paws for Purple Hearts is the first program of its kind to offer therapeutic intervention for veterans and active duty military personnel by teaching those with post-traumatic stress disorder to train service dogs for their comrades with combat-related injuries. See, it's a great program. Go to www.pawsforpurplehearts.org. Okay, we're just going to do a little legal goo today. Opinions expressed on Trisha's True Crime Radio are those of the hosts and guests. And do remember, Trisha's True Crime Radio is a completely separate entity from WebSleuths.com, LLC, and ForumsForJustice.org. And tonight, we have Kathy from Court Chatter with us. Also, you're going to hear from a man whose brother was kidnapped, raped, and murdered back in 1995. His name was Jimmy Rice. Jimmy's killer was executed last week in what proved to be a very exhausting experience for Jimmy's family. Jimmy's brother Ted is here to tell us all about how his family was able to take their grief at the loss of Jimmy and channel it into the Jimmy Rice Center for Victims of Predatory Abduction. It is an amazing organization. You will be totally surprised, and you'll trust me, you'll want to get involved. We'll be talking to Ted Rice in just a little bit. Later in the show, we'll talk about the new charge that's been added to the couple who are being held in the disappearance of Heather Elvis, and we're going to discuss the Haley Owens case. Haley's community really came together yesterday. They had a massive vigil, something like 10,000 people in support of Haley and her family. But first, let's face it. We all know that a five-day-a-week true crime radio show, be it on AM or FM or satellite, is desperately needed, right? Right. Well, the good news is I do have my foot in the door barely. I'm on iHeartRadio.com on Thursday nights. It's part of Clear Channel, which is the largest broadcasting company out there. My little show airs Thursday nights, 8 p.m. Eastern on iHeart. Now, I have something called a Spreaker account. That's Spreaker. And don't ask me to explain it because I don't get it. Somehow, my show being connected to my Spreaker account is very important. So what I need you to do is to go to my Spreaker page and follow me, kind of like you do on Twitter. And Sleuth could put that up in the chat room, the Spreaker address, and I'll tell you what that is. It's www.spreaker.com/user, and then Tricia, TRICIAG. Okay, spreaker.com/user/TrishaG. If you could do that, I would be forever grateful. I don't get any money. In fact, these shows cost me money. I make nothing on either show. But we really do need a five-day-a-week true crime radio show, and that's what I'm shooting for. So if you could help me out, I would be forever grateful, my darlings. Now it's time for our first guest. On September 11th, Jimmy Rice, September 11th, 1995, Jimmy Rice was abducted, raped, and killed by Juan Carlos Chavez in Redland, Florida. Last Wednesday, a couple of Wednesdays ago, Chavez was executed at the Florida State Prison. And with us tonight is Jimmy's brother, Ted. And let's get to Jimmy's brother's killer. Are you, Ted? There you are. Ted, thank you so much for joining us tonight. I really appreciate it.
You got it, Tricia. I'm happy to be on the show.
Good. And you are Jimmy's older brother. You were 19 when Jimmy was taken, correct?
Yes, Jimmy was very close to turning 10, and I was 19 at that time.
Wow, that just must have been so incredibly traumatic for you and the whole family. Ted, while I was researching this case, I came across something very interesting from a reporter. He covered your brother's disappearance and his death. He said that covering your brother's story was so troubling that it basically changed him, and that's really rare to get a reporter to admit that. Can you just kind of, and I know this is painful, but I think it's important for our audience to understand what happened, because it's what your family did later that is just amazing after overcoming this horrible, horrible event. What happened in your brother's case?
Yeah, and just yes, is it painful to talk about? Yes, but it's not about me anymore. It's about Jim's legacy and my family's legacy and what we've worked for, like you mentioned. So what happened to Jim? Jim was dropped off at his bus stop, not even a half a mile from where he lived, from our house in the Redlands, and a man pulled up in a pickup truck, got him into the pickup truck at gunpoint, threatened him, he had a gun, and took him to a trailer about a mile away from our house in the Redlands, and he sexually assaulted my brother, and he tortured him with mind games when my brother asked if he was going to be killed or if he was going to be able to live. He said, "What do you think?" And that's what he, that was part of his confession, and he eventually shot my brother as Jimmy was trying to escape.
Oh, God.
And he later took the body, dismembered Jimmy into pieces, put him in planters and filled them up with concrete and left them, I forget the exact area, but it was very close to where we lived. It was just a very terrible, disgusting, horrible crime. And it's forever changed not just my family, but the community here in South Florida.
And I know we don't want to spend too much time on Jimmy's killer, but I do think it's important to find out a little bit about a person who does something this horrific so we can maybe spot some warning signs to stop somebody like him from doing this again. What can you tell me about this Juan Chavez?
Well, he worked as a farmhand, and by the way, I do agree with you. I think it's very important not to live in fear of other people, because most people are good, at least in our communities here. I mean, the U.S. is a great place to live. But it's important that we're aware of the people around us, the people around our children. And I don't know a lot about him. In fact, I had never seen him until February 12th when he was executed. But we do know he worked as a farmhand on a ranch that was in my neighborhood. And he was very reclusive. And not that much is known about him, his life. We know that his mother showed up for the trial when that happened. But we know that nobody ever visited him in prison. He had no visitors ever. He was, and something else that I think was very telling was that he made no last statement, no verbal last statement, but he made a written statement. And in that written statement, he never apologized for what he did to my brother. He never apologized to my father, to my family, for what he did. And he never tried to say he was innocent as well. He was a man that seemed to lack a conscience completely, lack any ability to be compassionate or to understand the horror that he put my family through and put Jim through.
Right. And did he did have a criminal record, didn't he? I can't remember. And you're right, there's not very much written about him online. I really tried to find out his life story.
Right. And it's very hard to find. We know he immigrated here from Cuba. And that's part of the reason why not a lot is known about him. So there may be records in Cuba, but no, he did not have a criminal record. There were no prior instances of him being involved in anything like this. That's not to say he hasn't been, but
right.
we don't know about it.
Well, depending on when he came over, I don't know if you remember this, Ted, but there was something called the Freedom Flotilla, or Flotilla, and it was Cuba letting anybody who wanted to come over to the U.S. do so. I think it was in 1980, and there were reports that the prisons were emptied, and they all came to the U.S., and so when I hear that he's from Cuba, I'm wondering if he was in prison in Cuba and was known to be like this, and he just came over on our shores.
You know, I can't answer that question.
Yeah.
I do know his mother came to the trial and did talk about his life, but I don't have those answers. And I would also like to say that he was Cuban, but that's not something that my family focused on. That's not that I was concerned with. It was just
right.
the details. And,
yes.
You know, there's been Jeffrey Dahmers and, you know, Ted Bundys, and there's, unfortunately, horrible people like that. It doesn't have to do with where they come from. So I just wanted to make that clear. I have a lot of Cuban friends, and, you know.
And I wasn't suggesting that. Yeah, I wasn't suggesting
that.
I'm just saying that maybe he was just part of that story of emptying out all the prisons. No, unfortunately.
Sure.
There are scary, crazy, evil people in every shape, form, and color you can imagine. So it's not limited. But I think it is important to find out. And unfortunately, just for research sake, we won't be able to find out, or we can't. Maybe his mother could tell us a little bit more. But I do think it's important because we need to recognize those signs. I can promise you, not knowing anything about the guy, that he exhibited some signs of some sort of deviancy. But again, you know, you can't go back in time and figure that out. Now, your mother has since passed away. Was she alive when Jimmy was taken?
Yes. You mean Claudine, Jimmy's mother? I'm sorry. My biological mother was Claudine.
Yeah.
Jimmy's mother was my stepmother. So.
Okay. Yeah, I'm talking about Jimmy's mother. She was alive then, right?
Yeah, she was alive. And she, by the way, raised me since I was 6 years old, so I did consider her my mother.
Right.
And Jimmy, I was there. I used to feed him with a bottle in my arms when he was just a little baby. Mm-hmm. And so I never thought of them in that way, but
sure.
We just grew up together, just to be clear about that. But technically speaking, she was my stepmother, and yeah, she passed away of a heart attack in 2009.
Uh-huh. Oh, that's so tragic.
Yeah, my father says that she died of a broken heart. I would have to
I believe
agree.
That. Absolutely, I would believe that. But in addition to this horror that your family went through, And you did get a lot of help from the community, right? They were able, 1995
absolutely.
Was a time, but they came through,
yeah.
right?
The community
what did they
do? Really came. They helped us search for them. There was a three month search for Jimmy.
Uh-huh.
We didn't find out right away. There was a 3 month search, and the community and the media as well, they were out. They were helping us get the word out. They were helping us look in fields, looking everywhere, just scouring the area, looking for Jim, any signs of Jimmy, anything that we could find that would give clues as to what happened to him. And that's one of the reasons that inspired us to do something, inspired my father and my mother to go on and do so many things, is because they felt like that the community really stepped up and joined in and really helped them so much that they felt they needed to give back when we finally found out what happened 3 months later.
And that's what your family has done. And I want to talk about this because everybody needs to go to this website and and see what your family has done. It is absolutely amazing. Tell us about the website. Tell us what it's called and the organization and what you do. Let's get to the really happy stuff here that helps other people.
Absolutely. The Jimmy Rice Center for Victims of Predatory Abduction. The web address is jimmyrice.org, and that's spelled Jimmy, J-I-M-M-Y, Rice, it's with a Y, R-Y-C-E.org, so jimmyrice.org. And we provide bloodhounds free to law enforcement to help find abducted and lost children. We counsel and provide support to parents of children abducted by sexual predators. We try to increase the public awareness of sexual predators and predatory abductions. And my parents have also passed laws, help push through the Jimmy Rice Act, which detains known sexual people who are in prison for a sexual predator offense. They used to just serve their sentence, then be put back into society. And
right.
While the problem with that is that a lot of them there's a high rate of recidivism, meaning that they go back out, they do the same thing. So you let them out because they, quote-unquote, pay their due to society, then they go and molest, abduct, kill another kid again. And
right.
That was not acceptable to my parents, so they fought to put through a law that would help change that. And it's actually worked very well in many cases. Some people have criticized it, but I think it's very important to look at the protecting our children as the number one thing.
Absolutely. Everybody else's rights, kind of, you know, tough, too bad. We have a right to have our children be safe. And so what they do is, exactly what does the Jimmy Rice Law do? Somebody commits a crime, a violent crime against a child, but is going to be released. What happens?
So what would happen is that the act calls for inmates with sex offense histories to be reviewed by the Florida Department of Corrections, the uh-huh. Department of Children and Family Services, and the state attorneys to determine the level of risk for that criminal to see if they're going to do it again.
Right.
And if they feel that there's a strong chance that they'll commit the act again, they detain them. They put them in a type of institution. It is a treatment center.
Mental health center,
where
right.
Where they're further detained.
Right. And and then only when they're deemed safe will they be released, right?
Yes.
Got it. I want to go to one of our dear friends. It's Kathy from a website called Court Chatter. And Kathy's been listening the whole time. Ted, Kathy has a question for you. Kathy, go ahead.
Hi, Ted. I'm just heartbroken listening to this story, heartbroken. I have a son who's 8 years old, and I hate the evil that is in this world. I also agree that there's more good than bad in this world, but we just have to be diligent. Actually, he explained what I wanted him to explain. I wanted to talk about the Jimmy Rice Act. It's interesting that this morning I was watching some Florida bond courts stream their bond courts, so first-time appearance. People get arrested, and then they go but before a judge, first appearance. And I was watching Orange County's this morning, and at the same time I had been reading all about your brother, because I knew you were going to be on the show tonight, and a judge referenced the Jimmy Rice Act when he was telling a guy what he was charged with and what his options were going to be released, and he said, according to the Jimmy Rice Act, and he went on to talk about it a little bit. And so you had just explained all that, but it is being used down there in Florida, and it passed unanimously, and it's a great thing. We know that, I mean, there's been all of this scientific research done that sexual predators don't rehabilitate.
No, they
right.
can't.
Absolutely.
Especially the violent, you know, predatory like Ted has referred to, the predatory ones, that's just who they are. It's like trying to change their eye color through talk therapy. It won't work. You know, you've got to, the pursuit of happiness is something, you know, that our ability to feel safe out there is the number one thing. And that overrides their pursuit of freedom. If they're going to somehow violate our freedoms by just being out on the street because they're violent. You know, I'm sorry. There's just, society needs to take action like this, and it makes me crazy when people say, no, we can't do it. Yeah, we can, because it's common sense. It just makes me crazy. Yeah. Ted, go ahead.
It's so important, and I listened to, I guess she was a psychologist, talking about how she can get some of these people. I don't think it was, she didn't define whether it was violent sexual predators or people who had molested children, but she was talking about, oh, well, you know, it's not fair. These people, they can learn to be different. It's like, listen, I'm okay with that if you can show me with 100% success rate that they are going to do it again. Because if it's just 99, then I'm not interested. It's not worth the we're talking about people who've committed something against the most vulnerable people, the most vulnerable members of our society, our children. And it's just 1%. A 1% failure rate is not acceptable.
Absolutely not.
In my opinion.
Right. No, and I don't think anybody would argue with that. Kathy, did you have something else you wanted to add?
No, that was about it. I just wanted to talk about that act and this comment that good things come out of evil circumstances, and we see that happen all the time.
Yes, like the Jimmy Rice Act and like the Jimmy Rice Foundation. Is now, do you accept donations? Is it an actual charity, Ted?
Yes, we do. And all of that, I want to be very clear. This is a true charity. I work for a living. My father works for a living. This is every single penny that goes to the Jimmy Rice Center, goes to the website maintenance, and most importantly, to donate bloodhounds to law enforcement. We give them away, and it costs about $1,000 to do that. So that's our main goal. And why bloodhounds? It's not just because they're cute, although they are, but they're short of inserting some type of GPS chip in our children, which brings up all sorts of other things.
Right.
They're the best technology we have for finding missing people, missing children.
Absolutely. You get a bloodhound on that trail? Oh, go ahead.
Excuse me?
No, you go ahead. I'm sorry. I was just babbling. I want to hear what you have to say. You're much more interesting than I am.
No problem.
Go ahead.
Okay. I don't know about that, but thank you. anything that anybody listening out there, even if you can donate a dollar, it's so important that we keep this going. I hate to say this because it sounds so terrible, but it could be your child, or it could be the child of someone you know. Or maybe they're just gone and maybe nobody's adopted them, but these dogs will help find them. And there's such great stories from some of the handlers. Unfortunately, it's hard to get them to talk. And maybe you can possibly get them on the show if that's something that we could make happen, and they can tell you some of the amazing stories of finding children, finding other missing people. It's just, and the guys who have the dogs, they're super cool guys, and they're not in it for the limelight. They're in it because they really believe in what they do, and that's why it kind of it's difficult to get them to talk at the same time. But and our goal is to get 28 new bloodhounds. Why the number 28? Jimmy would be 28.
And that's
to honor his legacy.
Right. Let me give the address again. And so this is a 501(c) charity then? It's a tax-deductible charity, or do we...
Yes.
Okay. So what it is...
I'm sorry. Yeah, I don't know all the technical details. I can find all that out for you. I just didn't want to say anything that I wasn't 100% sure of. But yes, as far as I, yeah.
I'm sure it is. I can't imagine it isn't. Yeah. So here's the address. It's www.jimmy, that's J-I-M-M-Y, Rice, R-Y-C-E.org, jimmyrice.org. Well, Ted, if you ever need any help with anything, come to me. We're a big, large group of people who want to help any way we can, and I'll certainly put this up all over the place and places, and I'll tweet it out, and we'll see if we can get you some money out there right away, okay, to help to get those bloodhounds up and into the hands of their handlers, okay?
That would be great. And finally, I would also like to take a moment to reach out to people who are listening to your show that have been impacted by tragedy. I understand what you're going through, and one of the things that I'm personally trying to promote out there is that you can turn anything that you've been through into a positive. You can use it, no matter how horrible, like what happened to my brother, you can use it to make your community better, to make a difference, so that whatever suffering, whatever horrible thing you've been through, you can use that and improve other people's lives and give meaning to what happened to you. So that would be my final message. I personally started getting into health and fitness. I take care of my dad. I've written his workout programs for him. I'm very into health and fitness, and that was something that really got me through some of the toughest times during these years. And
sure.
I just wanted to put that out there. There's always something you can do, taking care of yourself and finding meaning in that tragedy and looking for things like my parents did, for loopholes in the system. Something isn't right, and you can be the person to make a difference. Although you can never change what's happened to you and what you've been through, you'll always have that, but you can turn that into something. So that would be my final message, Tricia.
And, Ted, what a wonderful, uplifting message. We can learn so much from you and your family. You didn't let this tragedy take the life out of you. You did exactly that. You turned it around, and you have done something to help the community to make sure that what happened to your brother Jimmy does not happen to anybody else ever again. The Jimmy Rice Center for Victims of Predatory Abduction, and that is www.jimmy, J-I-M-M-Y, Rice, R-Y-C-E, .org. Ted, we're here for you anytime. You've got my number. You just call me and let me know what you need, and we'll be right there helping you any way we can, okay?
Tricia, I really appreciate that, and it's been good being on your show.
Anytime, Ted. You take care now, okay?
You got it.
Bye-bye.
Thanks again.
Kathy at courtchatter.com. Wow. I mean,
wow.
I have goosebumps. I have goosebumps. You know, I to hear him talk, he was only 19, and he had his little brother. You know, that was his little brother. That was his buddy. There were 10 years difference, so he was really, truly the big brother to this kid. And he must have felt just horrible guilt and everything. But he didn't let this monster take their family, the rest of their family's life away. And that is just an amazing message. I love it. Don't you?
I do love that. And you know what? You find that all the time with these families that have had a family member become a victim to something horrendous like this. You just see them rise above and take it and do something good with it. And I love that about I love that people can do that, because you think, if that happens to me, I will be destroyed. I'll never get out of bed again. I won't want to go on. But they find the strength. They find the strength to do good things. And
absolutely.
I have on courtchatter.com, on my post today for the show, I have a picture of Ted and Jimmy on there that I found. And I have that on there. And you can see it. And you can see it had to have been right before this happened, because Jimmy looks about 9 and Ted looks about 19. I don't know when that was taken, but it just brings it all home that these are just real people, and this can happen to anybody, you know. We're going to talk about Haley Owens. It's the same thing. Just walking home, right by their house.
Let's talk about Haley Owens. This is the nightmare of every parent. Broad daylight, 10 years old. You think it's okay. She's walking home, you know, almost to her house, and a monster, the boogeyman, grabs her and takes her and kills her. You don't think that will happen. You think, okay, that won't happen. It does, and that is what is so terrifying. Now, this guy, in Haley's case, and we have a lot of people in chat that want to talk about it, and I'd love to take your questions or ideas. In Haley Owens' case, this Craig Wood has had there's no arrest record. Everybody that knows him said he was a nice guy, quiet, of course, played in a bluegrass band, nothing to indicate there was ever a problem. He's 45 years old, and I don't know. It's kind of hard to believe that could be, but it could be, because they found, let me tell you what they found. They found a binder full of child pornography, and you have to ask this question of this Craig Wood. Did the pornography satisfy his sick, twisted need? Only to a certain point, and he could, and it didn't do it anymore, and he had to. Was pornography the jumping, the jumping off point to where he had to go get a child? I don't know. I don't have the answer. Child porn is twisted and sick, and it should obviously, anybody who looks at it, needs to be locked up. It's just terrible. But you have to wonder, for his adult life or whenever he started looking at child porn, maybe that's what all he needed. And then one day he just said, I can't take it. I'm going to do it. And Haley was the result of it. Or maybe he's been a child predator all along and just hasn't got caught. That is even more scary. And let's hope and pray they find out a lot. But let's see, they showed they had 16 guns, trash bags, bloody clothes, bleach, all kinds of stuff. Tell us what you have found out, Kathy. What's going through your mind?
So what goes through my mind is terror, because Haley was walking home from her friend's house two blocks away. My kids do it all the time here, all the time. My boys walk in this three-block radius that we have here with all of their friends here, and their elementary school is right here in that same three-block radius. And so she was just walking home. This makes me crazy. And the guy gets out, stops his truck, takes her, puts her in his truck, and the neighbors see it. And the neighbors start screaming, and a guy jumps in his car and takes off after them and loses him in traffic. So Haley was seen taken, and somebody was on his tail. I mean, that close to surviving this. I don't know how parents get through this. I don't know how they get through it.
I don't either.
So he takes her, and the police find him getting out of his truck in the driveway. He has duct tape in his hand, a roll of duct tape in his hand. And when they get in his house, they find her poor little body down in his basement, all wrapped up in trash bags. And the bleach is covering the floor from where he's starting to clean up. And, you know, she's a fourth grader and didn't know her. So this isn't somebody that has had contact with her. This is a complete stranger abduction. He was a middle school football coach. So here's the thing that you're talking about. Yes, he doesn't have a record, but you can bet something's happened. And I'll bet we'll find out. I'll bet somebody comes forward. If he's lived to 45 and been around middle school kids, which usually that's 6th, 7th graders, all of this time, you bet something's happened. It could be that what you said, that child porn satisfied him for so long, but I don't believe there's not another victim somewhere. Maybe not saying that he's killed before, but it's so horrifying to me. It's so horrifying because, you know, stranger abductions actually are rare.
Very rare.
They're rare. So I know people get really terrified about this kind of thing, but they are very rare. It's usually somebody knows the child, and that's how these things happen. But, man, this one just came out of nowhere.
And it geranium. Go ahead. No, I was going to say geraniums. She came up with the word I was looking for, and I couldn't come up with it. That was trigger. What triggered him that day to be so brazen? I mean, he didn't even try and hide it. He went out in broad daylight, everybody watching him, in his own truck. grabbed her. They had him inside. Everybody saw him. There were so many witnesses. It is, you have to wonder what triggered. And the reason why this is important, let me back up here, Kathy and everybody. People, when you think of stuff during the day, I do this all the time. And unfortunately, what happens when I start thinking like this, Nancy Grace comes popping into my head and bounces around my brain. When I start asking the question, we need to look at why he did what he did. I just hear Nancy just, you're trying to, you know, baby the guy who did it. You're trying to, you know, coddle the killer. No, we don't want to know, you know. Anytime you mention anything about learning why somebody did what they did, Nancy Grace goes ballistic and accuses you of, you know, wanting to give the killer a hug or something obnoxious like that. That's not the case. Wouldn't it have been how anybody could argue against trying to find out why these people do what they do is beyond me, because wouldn't it have been better to find out he was sick before he did this, before he killed somebody? Yeah. Of course it would be. What happened to him? He's 45 years old. He's into child porn. What happened to him? What cycle was going on in his life that created this? That doesn't mean he doesn't get the death penalty. I'd push the plunger in myself. I have no qualms about that. Because when you reach a certain point where they go, you know, when they can't be helped, then you have to say, okay, for society's sake, this person needs to be removed from society. I'm sorry, probably had a horrible childhood and all, but needs to be removed because he's like a rabid animal, a beast, and he will just hurt and keep on hunting. And what triggered this guy, this wood guy, I don't know, and I think that's going to be really important to find out what happened that day. Did he have something really bad happen? He lived with his parents, didn't he?
Yeah, but and listen, see, we talked about, you know, maybe he had a bad childhood or whatever, and maybe he did, but this is a little interesting tidbit. Police found evidence that he has a $1 million trust in his name.
Right, right.
Which I find very interesting because he's been appointed a public defender. So the prosecutor complained about that, actually. You know, why are the taxpayers paying for him? So I don't know what his childhood was like, but it doesn't sound like
Was it from a lawsuit? You know, did he sue somebody because he was abused? I mean, there's a million different things. And I keep harping on it, but one of the things I want to do with my show is to get everybody to understand we have to stop these monsters before they are created. And the only way to do that is to find out what happened. But that doesn't mean that you give them the death penalty, you punish them. You have to, for society's sake, you absolutely have to. But we need to learn. But I did find that interesting. $1 million trust fund, was it set up by his family? Was it from, like I said, a lawsuit? I don't know. I'm wondering, maybe he had a fight with his parents that day. It's like, you're 45 years old, you need to get out, you know, time to fly away. Maybe they found his stash of pornography. Maybe they knew about it, we're ignoring it. I think we're going to find a lot out in the days to come. But also, one thing, too, and I find this so heartwarming, 10,000 people, the estimate of how many people showed up for the vigil for Haley. I mean, wasn't that amazing?
10,000 people last night lined the streets for a candlelight vigil. I mean, that really is amazing. It says the local chapter of Bikers Against Child Abuse walked with the family members, and then thousands of others lined the sidewalks. That goes back to there's more good than evil in this world.
Absolutely. BAC is a great organization. Are you familiar with it, Kathy?
No, I'm not.
My nephew is in BACA, and it's great. They are these big, burly bikers, you know, and you'd see them, you might go, ah. But they're doctors and lawyers, and, you know, they're just everyday guys. But what they do, and boy, I hope I'm not misrepresenting them because they're such a wonderful organization, they help children who have been abused. Like when they need to go to court, they take them in court, and they surround the child, you know, so that the abuser is there. All these, you know, really tough-looking guys are surrounding this kid, and the kid feels safe. You know, they give him rides on motorcycles, and it lets the abuser know, hey, we're here.
Right.
You know,
Right.
Give it your best shot. They never say that, of course, but, you know, they are a fantastic organization. It's all to help kids who have been abused, and it's Bikers Against Abused Children, I think is what it is. It's BACA, or Bikers Against Child Abuse. I can't remember.
Yes.
Anyway,
yes. Yes.
Fabulous, fabulous organization. But, yeah, more than 10,000 people showed up, which to me, and that's a, you know, it was a kind of a small little section of town where she came from, so everybody really came through and to show support for the family. Have you heard anything from the parents? I've heard a little bit, but maybe you have kind of more of your finger on the pulse of what's going on with these families. Have you heard any more from Haley's family?
No, I haven't. I don't know that they're really out talking about anything. An aunt talked about how she was a happy-go-lucky kid and loved to dance, and, you know, just breaks your heart.
Now, Anne from Texas just put up in the chat room, this is interesting, that she thought Wood was involved with kids who were sent to alternative schools, you know, the ones that got in trouble. That would make a lot of sense. Because
well, it does say, yes. I was just reading that right before she put that up. Oh, he was also worked as a substitute teacher and teacher's aide overseeing suspensions.
Ooh, see that. You've got to
yeah.
Wonder. You know, he had access to troubled kids, and
right.
There you go. That's, oof. And it's so sad because now, here's the thing. He probably underwent a criminal background check, but, you know, nothing showed up. How do you ferret out somebody like this without giving them one of those tests where they, you know, show them the pictures and test their arousal rate? You can't do that. I don't know how you ferret it out. But it's sad because, you know, then you look at men who want to get involved and help children, and you just have this little seed of thought in your mind going, why is he here? And that's just tragic because there's so many more. Like you said, this is rare. But, let's see what it. Oh, Ann said he was in a trailer, a tent building with those kids. So, that is all kinds of things. We don't even know. I'm hoping they're interviewing the kids that he had direct contact with. And Scorekeeper, thank you for putting that up. It's bacaworld.org, bacaworld.org. Great organization. I just love them. Let's move on to Heather Elvis. Now, Sleuth, I sent you a link, and if you could put that up, I would appreciate it, to Heather's father. He wrote the most heart-wrenching, your heart will just fall to pieces when you read what he wrote about his daughter. And this man is going through a living hell. Basically, she was last seen, I think, either on the 18th or 17th, and then her car was found on the 19th. Now, the two people that have been arrested, they actually knew her, apparently. According to Heather's roommate, she was talking to the guy and crying. And then they set out. Now, they've been arrested. Let me get their names here. Hold on. I've got it right here. Okay, yeah, go ahead. I've got it here. You
yeah,
go ahead.
So, Tammy... So Tammy and Sidney Moorer, M-O-O-R-E-R.
Right.
Yeah. This is such an interesting case. She's a 20-year-old, but had some kind of relationship with this man who was, I mean, he's married. It's the wife and husband are the ones that are arrested, and he's 38, but had some kind of relationship with him.
It is bizarre, and like I said, her roommate was saying she was talking to him and crying. Now, here's the weird thing. They've been arrested for indecent exposure. I'm not sure that's connected to this case, because what I read was they went to a specific area, busy street, and both exposed themselves. Now, I don't know if that has anything to do with Heather's case or not, but that's just very bizarre. Now, today...
Well, at the same time. The same
right.
date.
The
yeah.
same dates, exactly. They were charged with obstruction of justice, so of course they lied to the police. And then today, kidnapping was added. So they must have some pretty solid evidence that Heather Elvis is was with them, and she's either being held or, unfortunately, the likelihood of her being alive is very slim, but it's happened before. We can just keep our fingers crossed. But I really think you should check out Sleuth. If you could find that, it's the Heather Elvis disappearance link that I sent you. Oh, I think I've got it right here. If you could read this father's blog, his name is Terry, you will absolutely, your heart will shatter into pieces. Oh, it doesn't let me cut and paste, darn it. Oh, there we go. Let's see if that will work. Yeah, there, I put it up there. It's at xoj.com. So I think if you just put in Heather Elvis at xoj, go to www.xoj.com and then put in Heather Elvis, you'll be able to see it. So it's just very, very bizarre. Don't you think it was kind of weird that they filed the charges today on a Sunday?
Well, because they posted their bond on the other charges.
Oh, that's right.
And so they had to hurry and hold them. They had a $20,000 bond, I think it was, on the indecent exposure and the obstruction of justice, and they posted it. So then when they do that, they get like 24 hours or something to hold them until they file something else. And so they filed those today. Tomorrow is the bond hearing. And according to what I've read, a lot of details are going to come out in that bond hearing.
What time is it, do you know?
It just says Monday morning. So I've actually asked the person that runs the Whoop TV site to start looking to see if there's going to be a live stream for that.
Oh, 9 a.m.
Watch it.
It's going to happen at 9 a.m. Yeah.
So if there's not a stream, then I will definitely find out details and get something up on Court Chatter about it, too.
Okay, that would be great, because that is something we need to hear, and I'm sure her parents are absolutely just beside themselves with grief tonight. And what's so tragic is people like you and myself and everybody listening out there, if we could take their pain away somehow, we would.
Yeah.
But there's just nothing we can do except show support that we're here with you, you know, and we'll be with you and anything we can do. But there's, you know, going through something that's horrific, it's just, you know, all we can do is show our support, and that's the best we can do. And, of course, we will always do that. Kathy at courtchatter.com, tell me what else you have going on.
Well, last week we had the quickest trial ever for Brandon Daniel. It was a death penalty trial. He killed a police officer in a Walmart, and really he didn't have a defense, and he tried to plead guilty to life, and the prosecutor said, no, we want death. So he was found guilty Friday, so tomorrow morning the death penalty phase starts. So the same jury will decide if he gets life or death. And then, interestingly enough, tomorrow also starts a trial of another Brandon Bradley, who killed a police officer when she was making a stop on him, a traffic stop. And, yeah, and the girlfriend is going to testify against him, and she's going to say that he said, well, she's seen my face and got my tags. I'm going to have to kill her now. And that's a death penalty trial, and that starts tomorrow.
There is lots going on. And on my iHeartRadio show this Thursday, 8 p.m. Eastern, I'm going to have John Lieberman on. John, I know you've seen him on America's Most Wanted, CNN. And if you happen to listen to the Howard Stern show, you've heard him there as well. He's written a great new book about Whitey Bulger, the mob boss. And he's researched it. Like, I think it took like 10 years to write it. It is the book, and it's very compelling. He is going to be on my show. Remember, you can go to Spreaker. Let me find it here. www.spreaker, spreaker.com/user/TrishaG, TRICIA. Spreaker.com/user/TrishaG to get all my past shows, and I'll post the link to the live show as well. I know it's complicated. I don't know why they make it complicated, but they do. They just do it to make me crazy. That's all I can tell you. So hopefully we'll see a five-day true crime radio show. And one of the main things I want to do on there is get the cases that don't get any publicity whatsoever. There are thousands of them, and I'd like to feature one a day if we could do that. So there's lots going on, and we are going to keep you updated. Don't forget courtchatter.com. I mean, Kathy is so right on top of it. It's scary. I mean, before I can even form a thought, she's got it written and posted it out there. So courtchatter.com. And Kathy, so thank you so much for joining me this week. Next week.
Thanks always.
You never know who the guest will be because we don't know what's going to happen. It is going to be a wild, wild week. And let's do remember this, that Trisha's True Crime Radio is sponsored by Pause for Purple Hearts in Palo Alto, California. Pause for Purple Hearts is the first program of its kind to offer therapeutic intervention for veterans and active duty military personnel by teaching those with post-traumatic stress disorder to train service dogs for their comrades with combat-related injuries. Go to www.pauseforpurplehearts.org. Okay, everybody, that's it for Trisha's True Crime Radio. Thank you so much. Remember, we discuss true crime and current events, and we always do it with common sense. Good night, everybody.